welcome your hosts, Caddy Frank and Aaron Fitzgerald, as they lead discussions about substance use disorder and the journey to recovery. You're listening to Redefining Recovery, a recovery revolution.
Good morning, Miss Erin. How are you today?
I'm good, Caddy.
Nice to see you this day. I want to welcome everybody to Redefining Recovery, a recovery revolution brought to you by Minnesota Recovery Connection. My name is Caddy Frank, the host, and my co-host is Aaron Fitzgerald.
Hello, everyone.
So, here we are. Again, yay. Isn't it fantastic? Okay, so we are here. Again, Minnesota Recovery Connection is where Aaron and I work, and we are here to talk about what recovery can look like and what recovery can not look like sometimes. And Minnesota Recovery Connection has a history in the peer recovery specialist world, in the peer-to-peer world. And a lot of people go, huh, what's peer-to-peer? Isn't that sponsorship? Isn't that what treatment is? Right, Aaron?
Mm-hmm.
You know, people get confused about what peer-to-peer services are. And it is a way to support the recovery community when you have somebody that has lived experience and you share that lived experience. And it comes from a place of how do we talk to someone in a way that we meet their potential needs because we understand. And that'll be our topic for today, is what are peer-to-peer services?
Yeah. Excuse me, I'm excited to talk about peer services because just 4 years ago, I didn't know that these services even existed. And I really think that my recovery could have looked a lot different had I used these services before. So
even if they were even available, I didn't even went back in the day, 100 years ago, 22 years ago. Huh?
Yeah.
What's this?
Yeah.
This doesn't even exist, except for it existed in a different ways. But not in the way that we deliver it at our organization and at many other organizations now.
Correct. Yeah. Before we start talking about that, though, Caddy, what's right with you today?
Oh, boy. Here we're starting off with what's right with me today. What's right with me today is I got here, and it's not very sunny. It's a little bit on the cloudy side, and I was reflecting in the car driving here, and I'm just grateful that today was a good day. Woke up, was able to go to my job. Do some troubleshooting, because that's what happens when you're working in the recovery world. But I got to play with my cat in my bed this morning, and that made me smile. And I got to get up and just realize that each day that I am in a recovery state of mind, I'm okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always perfect, though. It's not always perfect. Life still happens. So what's right with you, Erin?
You can always bring yourself back to that place of what's right.
Yeah.
Because of recovery. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's right with me today is that I can wake up and just genuinely put on a smile without even thinking about it. And the reason why that's right with me today is I actually heard a gentleman at the store yesterday say to the woman that was ringing him up at the register, he said, you'd look a lot prettier if you smiled, or you should smile more, one of those lines. And I looked at him real quick, and I looked at her, and I was like, girlfriend, you are pretty just the way you are. And she kind of gave me like a sideways smirk and kind of looked at him. And I just thought to myself, I've been told that before too, you know, but how many years did I literally push through life with a fake smile on my face?
Oh, so many times.
Right? So like to say that to people is just awful. Like, mm-hmm. No, what if something awful is going on in their life right now?
And a smile is just not even a possibility.
Yeah.
But they're at the store. They're buying what they need. They're taking care of themselves. Sometimes we just got to go there.
Yeah. She got shoulded.
Yeah. She got shoulded. Yeah. Yeah. We talk about should and could in our world. So
if
we need to have a little reminder on that one, that's could people. Could you do this? Could you do that? Versus should, because should equals shame. That's what we talk about in our world. And on occasion, I should people accidentally, and I catch myself. I think I've done it to you even, when we're like, oh, wait a minute, can't do that. So, you know, when you talk about somebody saying, you know, just smile, there's a person that was in my recent class, and he has a resting B face.
RBF.
RBF, yes, RBF, RBF face.
And, admittedly.
Yes, admittedly. And it was so interesting because I don't think you were at the training last week when this happened on Friday. It was this person's birthday. And he's an individual who wants to do recovery very in solitude. And he realized in this training this week that he doesn't have to, but it took a week for him to open up. And so it was his birthday. And I said, okay, everybody, we're going to sing him happy birthday. Oh, my gosh. It was so great. This resting butt face was gone. He was smiling, and it was huge. And we all saw this human, like, just break open. And I said, how are you doing? And he's like, that was, like, the best thing that I've ever had happen. And I was just
I have goosebumps.
Oh, I know. It was so great. But you know what? A smile is really to be genuine, not mm-hmm. necessarily to be told what to do.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think the world says we should just fake it sometimes. Mm-hmm. And faking it is just, it doesn't work.
We should fake it.
Yes, we should. No, we shouldn't. We could have a possibility of having a smile on our face, but only when.
Right.
Yeah. Did I say should?
I don't know.
Okay. No problem.
No shoulds.
So today we're going to be talking about peer-to-peer services. And this is the essence of what we do. And I think what I might do is I might take a little history run real quick with us, because I think that might help set up when we start this discussion after the break of where did peer-to-peer services come from. And so I was doing some research, and Minnesota Recovery Connection started their peer-to-peer services in 2009. But the history of it is SAMHSA, which is the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, really sort of started to, like, breathe some life into this back in 1890. That would be 1980 instead. I'm not that old. So in 1980, this sort of became part of the treatment world, the recovery world, the world of substance abuse disorder, because that's really what it was called back then. Then in 1990, there was a change where they're actually funding services. Now, I don't know where they were funding them, because it wasn't here in Minnesota, but I do know because of something that Aaron reminded me of, William White, who I call the godfather of peer recovery services. Mm-hmm. He is the one who really broke it on the East Coast. And so where we really begin to see peer recovery services come into a life of its own, breathing life in, is sort of the 90s, 2000s, and then here we are in 2024. And when we're looking at when I took the class back in 2016, it really hadn't even broken open in the Twin Cities area and in Minnesota. And then here we are in 2024, and we got jobs all over the place.
Right, thankfully.
Thankfully. So that's kind of a little pictorial of peer-to-peer services. And what is super important about it is that it is an opportunity for people to share their lived experience, which we're really going to get into, and begin to see that they come, peer recovery specialists, peer-to-peer services, recovery coaches, there's a lot of different, what are some of the other names that you know out there?
Peer navigators.
Recovery navigators. Yeah. So there's a whole.
Recovery coach, yeah.
Yeah. There's a whole troop of us out there mm-hmm. with different names. But it's that one-on-one lived experience walking alongside somebody that helps somebody really begin to say, maybe I'll be okay because mm-hmm. I'm not alone. Mm-hmm. I know in my early recovery, I felt so alone. I was so unique.
Yeah, and when I can relate to somebody and they're showing me this hope of what they've gone through and what their life looks like now truly, and they're not telling me what I need to do to get there because I don't want to go to the same place as them. They're just saying, what do you need? Mm-hmm. What can I help you with?
Yeah, it's that, I equate a lot of peer-to-peer services with the other things in our life. We will go to people who have had the same experience that we've had.
Absolutely.
Somebody who's been through a divorce, maybe, or somebody who has had...
Before we start college, for a certain degree, we might want to talk to somebody with right. that experience.
Right.
Do I really want this job?
Yeah. Or, you know,
do I really want recovery?
Yeah. Exactly. You know, even think about it in terms of like a job informational interview.
Yeah.
You go to somebody to see what that work looks like.
Yeah.
So we are just about ready to head into a break. When we come back at Redefining Recovery, a Recovery Revolution, we're going to be talking more about the ins and the outs of peer-to-peer services. Thank
Excellent.
You.
This guitar needs 6 strings, 'cause without it there's no.
Welcome back to Redefining Recovery, a Recovery Revolution. I'm Erin, along with Caddy, and we are here today talking about peer-to-peer services, peer recovery specialists. And so as the queen of training this peer specialist curriculum, Miss Caddy, tell us a little more about what this entails.
Well, certified peer recovery specialists, that's what a lot of what people talk about in our field. They talk about the certified peer recovery specialist, but really what we need to do is we need to start with training people to be peer recovery specialists. And that's really sort of the beginning. As I said, 2016, I took this class. I wanted to give back to the recovery community. And I found out there were some things that I needed to be sort of prepared for to be able to be a peer recovery specialist. And that the main thing is having lived experience. I mean, I think it's a space where if I have struggled with substance use disorder, really who is better to talk to initially? Somebody who has struggled.
Mm-hmm.
Because we really need to have that space where it's okay to be not okay. Because I was not okay for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that lived experience that is that real value.
Yeah.
And so we talk about that. We also talk about the fact that I have no right to judge anybody. Because if anybody knew some of the stuff that I did back in the day, I have no right to judge anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And we use a special set of skills when we do the training. We talk about motivational interviewing. We talk about understanding what these services mean and what they are intended for. So we use that motivational interviewing to talk to people and how to talk to people. Then we talk to people about the cultural differences. You know, we can talk about race, but we also have so many other differences that we have. So we try to give you tools around what does somebody need, but I can't determine that. They have to tell me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've used my stick person. We talked about that the last time.
Mm-hmm.
And then we talk about ethics and boundaries, and we talk about mental health and co-occurring, because really the chicken or the egg or the chicken.
Right.
You know, this is really, so when I talk about all these tools, these are the things that we actually go through, that I have a great team of humans that work with me to try to get the basic information about that. Because really what it is about the person in front of you, and maybe the trauma that they've been through that got them to that point, or maybe it isn't trauma, but it's just lived experience. Life was tough. And what do we do if somebody's had a tough life? Sometimes we just want to escape it. I know I wanted to escape the tough stuff. It wasn't trauma per se, but it was unpleasant living. And what we do is not clinical in any way, shape, or form. That's what treatment's for, right?
Right.
That's what detox is for.
Mm-hmm.
That's what those places are for. Inpatient, outpatient, hospitals, that's what they do. They do the clinical part. We are aware of what clinical services are, but that's not what we do, because that is a whole different set of skills that people have to do because they want to do it. People who want to do peer recovery services, they want to help people because they know how hard it is to find recovery. So we help people make plans. We help people make goals that they want to set. And I'm going to sidetrack to a conversation I had last night at about 5 after 5. I was in the office. The phone rang and I picked it up. And it was a woman. And she goes, I'm calling because my sister needs some help. My sister-in-law needs some help. And I was like, okay. And I said, what's going on? And she said, she's got this going on. She's getting a divorce. She's been in the hospital. She has all these things. And this woman happened to be a nurse. And she's like, I know what she needs. And I said, but do you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she's like, well,
did
what
you
do
ask
you mean?
Her?
Yeah. I said, She's like, well, what do you mean? And I said, has anybody talked to her about maybe why she's using this substance, which is alcohol, and what's going on? And she's like, well, we just need her to stop. And she's been through treatment. I said, oh, okay. Can you tell me anything about the treatment? She goes, well, I think she faked it through. And I'm like, okay. And it was so interesting, Erin, because this woman, as a nurse, she knew what needed to have happened. Yeah. But I said, have you asked her why?
Yeah.
And I got silence, but also I can almost hear the pen scratching on the other end of the phone.
Yeah, absolutely.
She's like, no. And I said, do you think there's any trauma? She's like, well, her father was an alcoholic. And I'm like, that could be a place where learned behavior, pain. And I said, is there anybody else? She goes, well, her mother is very, what's the word when you allow things to have happen? Not codependent, but gives her the tools that she needs.
Enabling.
Thank you. There's the word. Just escaped me. No, thank you. Very enabling. She's a nurse also. And so we have a lot of professionals wrapped around a woman, and they can't seem to help her. And I said, but you can't help her.
Yeah.
She has to help herself.
Right.
But we have to ask the right questions. So those are some of the real finer points that I think that we need to talk about with peer-to-peer services, is that what does a human need based on what they think, not what we want to try to, I put in air quotes, fix.
Right.
Because fixing don't work.
No, we're not fixing at all. That's when it goes back to those interviewing skills, the motivational interviewing. What are we going to do? We're going to try and elicit change talk from people.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to try and get them to tell themselves what they need, because sometimes we don't know, right? I was clueless.
We're clueless.
Absolutely.
Jinx,
I don't know.
It.
But yeah, exactly. We're clueless. Totally. You know, so when somebody starts finally asking you the questions that nobody has before, mm-hmm. and really starts to pull that information out of you, and then you're like, oof, I guess I do need this. There was so many things. I still just, even like a year ago, I'm like, it wasn't that bad. Erin, good Lord, you were homeless at one point. Like, there was a lot. It wasn't that bad. I was functioning alcoholic. No, child, you weren't. But I needed people to ask me the questions for me to actually see that.
Right.
Right? Because it felt like life was good mm-hmm. for some reason.
Well, we're living in this and we've gotten used to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what happens a lot. You get used to being in that place.
Absolutely. It was trauma after trauma, junk after junk, like just an escape of nothingness. And it just became normal. And so when the next bad thing happened, it wasn't that bad.
Mm-hmm.
I'd just fix it or figure it out and move on to the next bad thing.
And then who better, who's been through both some of the roads that you and I just talked about, where we can say, but with you.
Absolutely.
And tell me, is this the way that you want your life to go forward? Is this comfortable for you? Because we don't know until somebody actually, like, I'm going to use the term, pokes the bear, but that bear is so hidden. It's in its den.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really want to come out. It is so, you're so afraid to actually talk about what it is. So I can say to someone, you know, I struggled with substance use myself. I had alcohol issues, and it was pretty dark on many times.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about you. Tell mm-hmm. me about what goes on with you. I mean, what better way to walk into it?
Mm-hmm. Right. Somebody already has an idea of what they want to do, maybe because they've seen, you know, successful with somebody else, or somebody said you should do this.
Mm.
And then you still ask those same questions, even though they already know what they want to do. And sometimes they'll even change their perspective then,
right.
or see like, oh, there's more options. Mm. Well, I guess this is what I wanted to do because I thought that's what I could do.
Or what somebody told me that I need to do.
Need to do. I should do this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just comes all back around to really making sure, and I just keep thinking about this individual last night, and that is this woman who's having all these events happening. Has anybody actually wrapped love around this person?
Mm-hmm.
Wrapped care around this person? And maybe said rather what you need to do, what you should do, this is what other people do, to say, I love you, and I'm afraid for you, because it doesn't look like you feel very good, and you're kind of sick, and you've had some medical incidents, and you've had some consequences. what does that feel like? And, you know, I can only imagine if somebody would have said that to me back in the day, why was I just continuing to use these? But nobody ever does. And that's where peer-to-peer services is, like this magic little burst of a burst.
I got the cutest little vision in my head of somebody putting a warm blanket on me and then putting me in the driver's seat of my own bus. So I can drive my bus with all this loving support behind me. Yeah. I don't know. That's something that we talk about is they're their own bus drivers, right? We are our own bus drivers. And, you know, as soon as the people that we're working with come to their own conclusions, then we become resource brokers. Mm-hmm. We can lead them to the places that they need to go. Mm-hmm. So that they can get that clinical stuff they need.
Right.
If.
Well, and I think you said something earlier that's really important is that if somebody will come in, like this woman on the phone, she's like, I need to get my sister to stop drinking. I'm like, okay, now is that the first priority? And then as you talk to someone, it's like, well, like you had said, that's what I think I need to do next. Mm-hmm. And what a peer recovery specialist is, a person who's had lived experience, we can break it down and say, okay, so we'll use the example, okay, you need to get a job. Okay. So are you prepared to get a job? Well, yeah, I've worked in the past. Okay, what have you done? Well, I've done this, this, and this, but this is what I want to do. Like, are you prepared for that? Or do we need to take some steps back? Or not backwards, but do we have to put some steps in place? Mm-hmm. And help people understand the process of getting the job, but then also, is your substance use gotten in the way of the jobs you've had in before?
Sure.
And, well, yeah, I got fired from this and I got, you know, let go from that. Do you want to just sort of rewind sort of how your life has been going and tell me a little bit about that? Because sometimes we get so focused on what we should do because somebody's told us what we should do. And folks, we are kind of beating the drum here. But it is really the nut to crack. And when you want to see somebody find their recovery, we need to talk to them. Tell us about, you have somebody who's you've been working with for a couple of years now that just went on a drive and got some furniture. How have you cracked her open a little bit in your peer services?
Oh, she's lovely. So just about a year I've been working with her, and she's an older woman and just has needed literally just that love and support, and just still does. And when I talk to her and she's feeling down, she still has days where, you know, she's made some great progress is what I'm trying to say. She has made some incredible progress. She's got a new home. She's got a new smile, literally. She's got, she's close to family, but there's still stuff, and she still feels alone and stuck. And literally all I do is I just show her love. And just listen to her and just let her unload. And if she needs something, she'll let me know. But I'm basically just a place for her to have a safe space so she can say these things that she can't tell other people or doesn't feel comfortable to.
Right. I think another thing that I kind of forgot to mention, which is insane, and that is the best and most important part of peer recovery services is to listen to
listening.
People.
Yeah, listen.
Because a lot of people are just... they're caught in that loop of this is what you're supposed to do, this is what you're going to do, and this is how you're going to do it. And I say you're going to go into treatment. It's like you know you get up, you go to a meeting, you have or maybe you have breakfast, and then you're told what to do, when to do, where to do it, how to do it, and then do it again. And what we want to do is we want to give people their choices back, because so many choices are taken away when we are lost in our substance use, because we don't even know what they are anymore.
Yeah. And then they do that while we're in treatment, or maybe we're incarcerated, and then we exit that place and they say, now go be. And that's where the peer comes in, right?
Right.
As that gap. Because when I left treatment several different times, I felt excellent. I knew what was going on. My brain was straight. I knew what I had to do. But then I went back to the same place with the same people, same environment, same job, all the same. And the only thing that had changed was the information in my brain and in my heart. And, well, when I have all these other same things coming at me again, it was really easy to fall back into that cycle. And so having that peer recovery specialist to connect with, whether it's on a daily basis or weekly basis, is just really, really important, because they can make the phone call to me and they can reach out to me. mm-hmm. which is really, really important too, because sometimes it's really hard for us to reach out to other people.
Right. Again, you know, Erin, I love having you as my co-host because you prompt things in my brain. And I think a lot of times when families are having a person in their life go through treatment or go through any kind of program, they expect them to come out and be just fine.
Be more better.
Be all good. You got this chemical out of your system. You've been in there 30, 60, 90 days, maybe longer. You got your stuff all together. But you just said exactly what happens. You go back to the same neighborhood. You go back to the same house. You go back to the same problems because the rest of the family hasn't necessarily done anything different.
Right.
They're just thinking you're the hot mess when, maybe it's the family unit or the partnership unit or the neighborhood you're in that really needs to have an adjustment. Mm-hmm. And as you said, if we can implement somebody who has made those changes, which is a person in recovery, living in recovery, the requirement is a year when somebody wants to do this work because they are living in sort of like two worlds, I call it, when I'm training folks. They come in and they're in sobriety and they leave in recovery.
Yeah.
You know, there's that transition. You've seen it happen many times.
Oh, yeah.
And so when you've moved from sobriety, which is amazing because you really are beginning to get your feet on the ground, then if you want to become a peer recovery specialist, you want to help your fellow human, you take a class, my class. I'm always, of course, going to be a proponent of it.
Mm-hmm.
But then you come out and you sort of have this new shift in your brain. And I've seen people who are really hardcore people who believe in one specific program, whatever that program is, and they're changing their tune by the end of a week.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's the person who can say, oh, I know what this means now. I don't have to do it that way. There are all these pathways to recovery. I don't just have to fit inside that one little box.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about that in both Erin's story and my story. It's all about what are the ways that people want to recover. Like you've said, see the human and what it is they want to evolve into, not what we think they should.
Right. Yeah. So we keep taking that stick person and keep adding to it. Because as we recover, because it's an action, right,
mm-hmm.
we keep continuing to recover, those little pieces of us are going to change too,
mm-hmm.
right? That doesn't mean that we necessarily need to continue with our peer forever, but we need to take a look at ourselves too and say, what do I need now?
Mm-hmm.
What do I need now?
Yeah, it's really amazing when you see somebody who begins to sort of develop there. I've seen many people come in. One of our employees, she's got a woman who comes in once a week. And I've seen this woman come in very sort of like shoulders mm-hmm. in and kind of closed up. And she just came in yesterday to meet her peer recovery specialist. And she's sort of sitting back in a chair. She's got a straight back. And she comes in. She's ready for her appointment. And she's like present in her space. And we see this with volunteers. They come in and they're kind of, they're not closed.
They're in a little shell.
Yeah, they're in a little shell. Yeah. And then like they volunteer and they're not necessarily getting the services from peer recovery specialists, but they're getting this recovery community
mm-hmm.
and they're building people. And we see just like these lights go on. And so it all comes down to being around individuals that understand that it's okay to not be okay, but it's also okay to talk about it.
Absolutely. I wanted to say about that peer recovery specialist and the gal you're talking about. I've seen her grow. I've also mm-hmm. seen, Alicia.
Mm-hmm.
Alicia has grown as a peer recovery specialist. 2 years ago, I didn't even know her then, just 1 year ago when I knew her. And now doing the work has helped her just flourish.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's just doing bigger and amazing things in the justice involved department. But it's so cool to see it on both sides, watch people flourish.
Really good. Really good. I was yesterday, Erin and I both went to a grand opening of a space. And I was thinking when I walked in, I thought, this is a place where people are going to begin to heal. And we'll talk about that when we talk about in our next show about harm reduction. But when I walked in there, one of the peer recovery specialists that I trained like 4 years ago was there. And she looked at me and her eyes just got gigantic. She's like, Katie, hi, you trained me like in, what was it, November 2020. It was during COVID time. We were on Zoom, but I'm doing so great. And I'm like, tell me more.
She was so excited that that's the first thing she told me when I said I worked at Minnesota Recovery Connection. She told me all about you in the training. It was great.
Well, and it's like you said, and what we see, we get to see people who want to do something good for the community, mm-hmm. and then they take a class, take our class, they begin to grow, and they begin to breathe life into themselves, but they are breathing life into our recovery community. Mm-hmm. And she was telling me all the different things that she does and the different spaces and places that she goes and how much she is affecting several different communities in sort of middle Minnesota. That was where she is. And then I looked at her and I said, you know, one of the really strong components, and if you remember this, is I said, how are you taking care of yourself? Mm. And one of the key things is that when we are working with people, we, the people who are doing the service of peer recovery services, it's one of my big components is taking care of ourselves. But we have to remind the people that we are working with, they need to take care of themselves. And yeah. That ain't so easy.
No, and in what capacity, what does that even look like to most of us? Like, mm-hmm. I remember learning about self-care and things that I should do for myself and making it feel selfish. So I refused to at first, right? Mm-hmm. Like, for me, away from all these other people when I could be doing this other thing, mm-hmm. I should be doing this other mm-hmm. thing mm-hmm. is what it was. Yeah, self-care yeah. is great.
Well, we put so many different responsibilities on ourselves, mm-hmm. and particularly when we're in recovery, we're kind of proven to other people that we got this, and we're going to workplaces where we got this, mm-hmm. and we might not always got it, but we're getting better. And regardless if you've got 2 months or 22 or 23 years, however many years I have in my recovery, every day is still a journey because it is still there. And I think that's another component about remembering that if you don't acknowledge the fact that you have a substance use disorder and saying, okay, I'm doing okay today, but that pressure point could hit. Mm-hmm. And whatever that pressure point is, it could surprise you or it could come up, you know, and you're like, you're watching the ball come roll towards you and you just don't know how to get out of the way.
Yeah. How are you going to catch that?
Yeah. And you're just like, okay, but I got to take care of myself. I have to take care of myself. And that is sometimes really hard to remember that we have to take a breath. And so when I'm going back to the young woman I saw yesterday, I said, how are you taking care of yourself? And she's like, well, I didn't do so good in the beginning. I said, tell me more. Because that's what I say all the time. Tell me more. And she goes, well, I kind of burned out at one point. And I said, okay. I said, what did you do? And she goes, I saw it. And I don't think she gave me credit but she said, I do remember I have to do self-care. And I was like, great. And she says, now I do it on a regular basis.
Right.
And that's how I help other people because it's all part of the practice of being in recovery. It's not just one thing. It's so many different components.
Yeah, we talk about it being the eight
dimensions
of wellness. Thank you.
Yeah,
slipped me. Yeah, because it's not just about the substance. It's in fact, it's probably most importantly about all the other things. Mm-hmm. I mean, we try and remove the substance or do whatever with the substance, but there's all those other pieces that are really important.
Yeah, there's that emotional part. There's that environmental part, having a good, safe environment to live in. There's the financial part. A lot of people who are coming out of recovery might have done some destruction to how they either worked or have managed their money. So getting people on that path, learning about themselves and learning about their environment. Maybe they want to do some spiritual work.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of different components to coming back in to who you are. And when a peer and a peer talk together, we can sit down and we can say, I just suck at this one part. Mm-hmm. I just do not have my wits about me on how to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And then that person across the table from you goes, darn it, me too. That was a beast to get over.
You know what else is really nice about working with another person in recovery is that we can laugh a lot.
Oh.
I can laugh at the stupid things that I used to do or like the things that happened or whatever, or even the awful things too, mm-hmm. right? And that's so hard for other people to relate with. So,
yeah, awesome. I mean, there's more laughter in our office
Absolutely.
Than there are tears. Now, periodically, there are tears.
For sure.
Because sometimes you just got to
cry
it out. Yeah. And then when she gets your tears over, then you kind of look back and go, man, that was just something, wasn't it? So we're about ready to take our last break. And I want to thank you for listening to our conversation about peer recovery specialists and recovery coaches and navigators. And when we come back to Redefining Recovery, we'll just sort of tie this up in a pretty bow. So thank you.
Welcome back. Erin and Patty with Redefining Recovery, a recovery revolution. We have been talking about peer recovery services, what they are, why they're important. And Patty, I want to know, how do we get connected with peer recovery services?
Well, what you can do, so if you're an individual who is in their year-ish of recovery, I've had people who call me in their somebody just actually came into the into my net today. They're like 5 months in recovery, and they are interested in being a peer recovery specialist. And I'm like, well, I'm super excited for you, but I need to have you have a year in recovery. And why we do that is because once an individual has a year under their belt, they've probably begun to really put their life back together, and they have all kinds of questions. They have all kinds of different things that they're still working on, but it turns out that their recovery is pretty solid. So I direct people to go to our website, minnesotarecovery.org, and they can take a look at our peer recovery specialist training and what some of the qualifications are, what are some of the requirements. There's an application. There's a group interview that we do. We've got live classes. We've got online classes. And I want us to take just a moment to say, peer recovery services started at Minnesota Recovery Connection, like I said, in 2009, because two people wanted to do it differently.
Yeah.
And every time I do a class, I see people just want to do it differently. And that's what recovery coaching is all about. That's what peer recovery specialists are. So people will take the class. They will get a certificate from me saying that they took the class, and then what they can do is they can go to the state of Minnesota, the Minnesota Certification Board, and get the certification, kind of like teachers get certifications, nurses get certifications. You get actually certified by the state of Minnesota, and that gives people an opportunity to go out and work in whatever space they want to work in. And one of the key questions that I ask people when I'm in class, I say, you want to be a peer recovery specialist, who do you want to work with? Who is your audience?
Sure.
Who is that group of individuals that you want to work with?
Yeah, do you have a special sauce?
Yeah. Yeah, who's you want to work with? Kids, you kind of got to navigate that one because that one's a little bit touchy. But can you educate people? Do you want to work with mature adults? Do you want to work with, you know, teenagers?
Justice involved.
People who are living without homes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you want to work with individuals that are not necessarily off their substances but are looking to improve the quality of their life.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many different spaces that people can work in. So that's another part of the thought process.
And then for our listeners, if they are looking for services, if they or a loved one would like to be connected with a peer recovery specialist?
We can offer services at Minnesota Recovery Connection. We have free services. We have billable, air quotes, that's somebody who has insurance. And we can bill their insurance. That's a slippery slope. It doesn't happen for everybody. Not all insurances recognize peer recovery services, which is kind of sad, but we're making improvements all the time. And we also have services at Minnesota Recovery Connection that are a little bit less specific, like we do our telephone recovery support. So we train somebody who is interested in supporting people, and it's a great walkthrough for a new peer recovery specialist who's gone through training. They can start to do telephone recovery support, which is just calling an individual and saying, hey, how's your recovery going? And you just start this new kind of conversation. So it's a little bit of a gateway into peer recovery services. And the idea is that we got whatever you need at MRC, Minnesota Recovery Connection. We can help you with housing. We can help you with justice involved. We can help you with children and family services. We can help you with what else, Erin? I'm escaping me.
Everything else. All of the things. Yeah, I was going to say, as a volunteer, you have to have 1 month in recovery to become a volunteer. And when I have 1 day in recovery to become a volunteer, my apologies. And what I have seen in those that come in their really early days of recovery is them just growing and then becoming the peers. And they just kind of hang out. And, you know, as employees, we touch base and we want to know people's stories. What brings you in? Why are you here? What did you choose us for? Why recovery?
Yeah.
And then the conversations just go and their eyes light up. And then they start making those telephone recovery support calls. And then they take the classes and suddenly they're peers. And it's just incredible.
Yeah. And we also have intern opportunities. We've actually had a little stream of incredible humans do internships at our organization. And when you can be a person in recovery and work and intern in a place where it really is just all about what are the options in recovery, it's just mind-blowing. People just go, I never knew this was out there. Mm-hmm. We're sort of the best hidden secret some days.
Absolutely.
It's kind of insane, but it's true.
Yeah, and then all of the peers that I've seen grow and move on to other things, too. We've got people getting their LADCs mm-hmm. and moving on. And
licensed drug and alcohol counselor, just for those
Sorry.
Who are not. No, we got acronyms, folks. We got so many acronyms. Yeah, so LADCs, counselors, therapists, we've seen it grow. But then what's also interesting, Erin, is I have seen people who have been counselors, LADCs. They want to step back
yes.
from that role.
Yeah.
Because that's what we talk about in terms of what we are not, which is clinical.
Mm-hmm.
And I've actually seen several people say, I want to get back into just helping people in a different way.
Yep.
You know, it's hard to do that clinical setting and those notes. And you know, everything is timed so impeccably. And so it just can be overwhelming. And I have people just say, I'm a person in recovery and I don't really get the opportunity to talk about how I sustained my recovery, how I found it.
Yeah, I don't get to be vulnerable with them. And that's not helpful for either.
Yeah. Right? And so these folks come in and they're like, wow, this is so cool.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, it is.
Yeah. We have a new volunteer yesterday who started, who is an LADC a long time. He's been a counselor for a long time. And he was on the PSA and the Peer Support Alliance yesterday. My apologies. Another acronym there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a gentleman who's actually worked for the University of Minnesota in the
Transplant,
liver transplant.
Yeah.
And he's got some stories about some people who have had some struggles and how you get to that point. And I could hearken back to when we started this conversation about the woman who called. She's had some liver issues. And I'm just like listening to this gentleman talk about how people have to go through and the process they have to go through if they get to that end stage. And it's like, oh, can we interrupt that? Can we
yes.
just interrupt it? Can we have a conversation with someone? Please give us a call. Have somebody call somebody who says, it's okay. It's okay. It's really rough right now. It's okay. But what can we do? What can we do in the next 10 minutes to make your day better? And to start from that really, really small place, because sometimes that's where it's got to happen.
Yeah. So it's nice to see people coming from that clinical background and saying, I just want to show people love.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not allowed to.
Yeah,
and so I need to step back.
It's the whole idea around peer recovery services.
And showing people love kind of leads us into the topic that we'll talk about on the next show, which is harm reduction. I'm excited to talk about harm reduction next week, or next show, I should say. Excuse me. And what else do we got? We've got. We're about to wrap up the show.
Remember to catch us on your favorite
Streaming platform.
We'll still get this together, folks.
Yeah,
still getting the terminology down in my little brain. So your streaming platform that you choose. If you want to contact Minnesota Recovery Connection, you can go to minnesotarecovery.org. That's our website. We have all kinds of information there.
And feel free to check out that donations tab on that button. And then I would just like to let you know that our outro song is played by a band named Sunset, who is in recovery. They play and will play at the Walk for Recovery on September 21st, 2024. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you very much.